You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The announcement we made yesterday was $20 million over the next year for very cost-effective, easy-to-roll-out safety interventions on over 600 kilometers of rural state highways in three regions that have particularly high-risk roads. It's an extension to a program that was successfully implemented last year. And what it will see is rumble strips, wider shoulders, side barriers on some of the, and curve straightening on some of these very high-risk rural roads.
So this is specifically kind of investment for safety issues. It's not necessarily, you know, making more highways.
No, it's safety initiatives on existing rural state highways. And it is a very modest amount of money, although it is going to cover a huge amount of rural state highways in terms of distance. 670 kilometers is not insignificant. But it's just one measure in addition to the massive focus we have on road safety. So before Christmas, we announced $1.4 billion on state highways and local roads for safety improvements, including median and side barriers, passing lanes, wider shoulders. So this is in addition to that.
Over this holiday break, like every holiday break, a lot of the news stories that come out that you hear about are these major accidents. Mm. Are these, you know, these kinds of initiatives going towards decreasing that, or are we looking at trying to actually just get rid of road accidents altogether?
Yep, we are doing everything we can to bring down the death and serious injury rate on New Zealand roads. And I'm happy to say that this year's holiday period was 25% lower in terms of fatalities than last year. It's still too high. And we are consulting on a new approach to road safety over the next year, which will see a 10-year road safety strategy or transport safety strategy, which will hopefully make a big difference over that time frame in terms of significantly reducing deaths and serious injuries. And by significant, I mean reducing it down to one third of what it was last year.
Looking at this story and wanting to do this interview, I came across things like Vision Zero, which I hadn't seen before, hadn't heard about. But those sorts of initiatives that are implemented around the world, where they actually, the entire kind of approach to roads and those sorts of things is about safety rather than speed or convenience or anything like that. And it seems to me that Auckland or New Zealand isn't, that kind of initiative isn't behind our planning and our roading systems. Would you agree?
It hasn't been, and Vision Zero is something that I indicated last year we really want to investigate and want to be at the centerpiece of this new road safety strategy because it's been so effective in other countries. So Sweden and Norway, which are actually very comparable to New Zealand, particularly Norway, in terms of having a small population spread out in rural areas. Norway has very challenging geography like New Zealand does, and yet their road death rate was comparable to New Zealand's 20 years ago. And after implementing this Vision Zero approach, it's around a third of what New Zealand's is. Ireland and Canada are also comparable countries. They implemented Vision Zero a bit later than Sweden and Norway, who pioneered it. Ireland has gone from being one of the worst in the developed countries for road deaths to actually performing quite a bit better, and I think having about half the road fatality rate is New Zealand.
Mm. I want to talk about speed too. It plays a part in these incidents, but you've got places like in Germany where they have free speed highways and their accidents per capita are much less compared to us. Is this an issue of speed, or is it about the way the way that we drive, the way that we behave in our cars, our sort of arrogance, our car culture, that sort of thing?
Well, it's really about having appropriate speed limits for the road conditions. So they have very low speed limits in most residential areas in Germany. It's about 30 kilometers an hour across whole regions of, you know, urban development. And so that's part of why they have lower injury and fatality rates in Germany. Where they have no speed limit, it's very highly engineered roads, which are extremely expensive and will be very difficult to provide in a country as small as New Zealand. But in Germany, they also have a culture of when you get your driver's license, you learn about fuel consumption at different speeds. So there's other incentives not to drive at the highest speed on some of those roads, even though you could, because you'll be spending a lot more on fuel.
Right. So we could also even just be uninformed drivers.
Well, we don't. Recently we found that, the last government did a safe speed management policy. And what it found is like about over 80% of our roads, the speed is not fit for purpose, the road. In some cases, the solution will be engineering up the road so you can maintain a higher speed. In many places, it will mean a slightly reduced speed, and particularly in urban areas, which have some of our highest serious injury rates, which can be as bad as fatalities. They have the same fatality rate as state highways. Those local roads, the speed limit simply is too high, and particularly around pedestrians and cyclists. If you're traveling at 50 kilometers an hour, the chance of death if you hit a pedestrian is far higher than at 30 kilometers an hour.
But then you get, so back to the kind of culture of it, you get the floating of the possibility that downtown Auckland would become a lower speed limit area, which makes it safer for pedestrians, and there's backlash to that because people still want to drive fast in city streets.
Well, there's backlash, but it's like from how many people? You know, I mean, it's not necessarily the view of the majority of people. In fact, there's some loud voices, they're quite predictable voices, who allege that, you know, traveling at a higher speed isn't a problem. But realistically, the average speed in downtown Auckland is lower than the proposed lower speed limit. So, it's kind of a fantasy that you can drive at a high speed through the center of Auckland. It's not possible. But when it is possible, when there's not traffic, people travel too fast. And then that's when you get higher rates of pedestrians or people on bikes or scooters or whatever being hit by cars and being much more likely to die or be seriously injured.
Right. But so in terms of use, I don't know the numbers, but there may very well be a minority who is speaking to that backlash, right? And there may very well be a majority of people that are keen for a change in this kind of culture. Do you plan to, or are you hoping that the government will kind of help to influence a shift in that culture?
Well, certainly through the road safety strategy, what we're hoping to do is really engage with the key stakeholders and the public on what outcomes we want from it and what will be necessary to achieve that. And the evidence is that safe and appropriate speed limits are an important part of reducing deaths and serious injuries, just like cost-effective safety improvements across a large percentage of our road network are going to be far more effective at reducing deaths and serious injuries than spending the majority of the budget on just a few roads that we highly engineer.
Like you said, so previously, you know, our focus has been on roading and in a different kind of way to what this government is pushing towards now, but yeah, our national transport and our lifestyle even has been based on cars and the car industry, and we've grown in a way even kind of planning and that sort of thing. Our houses are all in suburbs away from everything, and we need cars basically to get around. How are we going to, you know, transform that and reverse that even, because it's not sustainable anymore, both in accidents but in terms of greenhouse, you know, gas emissions and all of those sorts of things. How are we going to change this kind of very implemented, ingrained nature of living?
Well, I would say that people haven't necessarily chosen the situation we have now. It was the consequence of planning and engineering choices that were made decades ago, often by, you know, technocrats with limited public input, that have led to the situation we have, where it's very difficult for many New Zealanders to get around without a car. But we are already in the midst of a bit of a transition where we removed those bad planning rules, which banned people from living in Auckland City and forced large amounts of off-street car parking to be provided with every new building. When we got rid of those rules in Auckland City, the population went in 1996 from about 2,000 people to 10 years later, 30,000 people. And now in Auckland CBD, more people live in the city center than drive into the city center. And that, at the same time, we've been investing in public transport that serves the city center really well. And we've seen huge growth in public transport, even in places where you wouldn't expect it, like Auckland's North Shore. You know, a $200 million investment in the Northern Busway now sees as many people crossing the Harbour Bridge in buses as in all the other traffic lanes combined at peak time. So as we've, you know, given people more choice about how they live and how they get around, we've seen that there is demand for alternatives to car-dependent suburban lifestyle. So we just need to keep providing those opportunities for people, and over time you can transition to something different. It is a little bit harder because in order to provide safe cycling, sometimes you have to reduce the number of on-street car parks or you take away a lane from traffic. And in the short term, there's a perception that that's reducing mobility. The reality is every time we do that, we're serving more people through the cycle lane or through the bus lane than we were through a general traffic lane or a few on-street car parks.
What about people, though, that, like, for example, someone living in Helensville that wants to go to university but can't afford to because they can't afford the transport? What about those people that are affected right now where these transitions, which may very well serve them in 5 years, but doesn't help them right now?
Yeah, it's difficult. I wish we'd been planning for this, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I first was working as a transport planner. I certainly knew that we needed to urgently be investing in public transport, reducing fares, allowing more dwellings to be built in the isthmus, you know, like, you know, closer to where universities are and where jobs are. And unfortunately, we had 9 years of a government that took us even further backwards than the previous ones. And so now we're playing catch up, and it's going to take time.
So is that also you needing to get diverse kind of ideas and voices into these positions of power?
I think that would have helped. I mean, I think the main barrier, and I don't want to politicize it. When I was working as a transport planner, I really genuinely thought there was no left or right political approach that, you know, it shouldn't be a left-right divide on transport and planning, because what's better for people, what's better for the environment is also more cost-effective, is also giving people more choice. And so it would seem to align across the political spectrum, because nobody in New Zealand really benefits from car dependence. Even if you're a motorist, you're stuck in traffic. People who would like alternatives are stuck paying more money on fuel and vehicles that are imported from other countries. So it's not really good for business. It's not really good for our economy to have to rely so much on personal vehicles to get around. And it's certainly not good to have such unaffordable housing. And part of that is the lack of new housing supply in the close to city centers, you know, in those inner suburbs. So there is this opportunity, but unfortunately, the National Party in particular seems very wedded to spending all the money on a few highways and to reducing people's living choices. You know, at local elections, they've tended to support restrictive planning regimes that prevent new housing from being provided in the inner suburbs.
Also, I just want to note the kind of negative mental and emotional health effects from driving every day by yourself.
Absolutely.
In a car, right?
It's actually very stressful driving, and, you know, studies of the brain would show you that driving especially in traffic, has a heavier burden on your cognitive function than pretty much any other activity you engage in. And so it is stressful and it is tiring and exhausting. Some people like to drive. I think the problem is that those, you know, maybe it's like 10 to 20% of people would always prefer to drive. That's fine. But they tend to project onto the rest of the population that desire and that preference, and then oppose changes that would would actually benefit them, because the people who want to drive are going to be better off if more people can jump on rapid public transport or take their bikes in safe separated cycle lanes, and if more freight can be moved on rail or by sea, you know, the people who need to use the roads are better off. So it's just, I guess we're just going through this paradigm shift where we need politicians on the right in New Zealand to recognize how a balanced approach to transport and planning actually is in line with their values and benefits their constituents.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.